This is the EMDocs.net podcast with Britt Long and Manny Singh. We bring you high-yield content about what you're seeing every day in the ED.
Welcome back to the EMDocs.net podcast. We're going to be looking at cholangitis today, a very deadly disease if it's not treated appropriately. Overall, about 15% of the U.S. has gallstones. 2 to 3% of these patients are going to develop a complication from these stones, like cholangitis. About 9% of patients admitted due to gallstones have cholangitis. Cholangitis is defined by the presence of increased hepatic intraductal pressure with a concurrent infection of the obstructed bile. This can ascend from the duodenum and then spread to the bloodstream. This means that cholangitis can rapidly progress to septic shock. Mortality rates reach 100% if this is not treated. Even in the current era, mortality remains high, up to 30%. Now, there are a variety of different causes. There's biliary calculi, benign biliary strictures, and malignancy. The most common is a bile duct stone in about 28 to 79% of patients. You also need to think about a calculus cholangitis. This is the absence of a bile duct stone or obstructive malignancy that usually occurs in severely ill patients. ERCP is associated with cholangitis in less than 2% of cases. Some special scenarios include Lamell syndrome and Merizzi syndrome. Lamell syndrome is extrinsic compression of the bile duct due to a duodenal diverticulum. Merizzi syndrome is a common hepatic duct obstruction caused by extrinsic compression from an impacted stone in the cystic duct or the infundibulum of the gallbladder. You may also have inflammation due to pancreatitis that can cause cholangitis, and then there's also intrinsic obstruction. This could be due to thrombosis or a parasitic infection. Now, no matter the underlying etiology, in cholangitis, the infection is not just limited to the gallbladder. In cholecystitis, the disease is contained and it's a localized infection. In cholangitis, it can spread to the blood and is not contained. There are two factors in cholangitis. There's the biliary obstruction and then bacterial growth in the bile, which can then spread to the bloodstream. This is the cause of that rapid progression to septic shock. Bile is typically sterile. In cholangitis, there's a biliary obstruction that creates a nidus for colonization and infection. Bacteria can ascend the biliary tree from the duodenum. Cholangiovenous reflux results in spread to the bloodstream with positive blood cultures in about 70% of cases. Unfortunately, the history and exam are not straightforward. Patients may present with a variety of signs and symptoms, including altered mental status or sepsis with an unknown source. We classically think of Charcot's triad and Raynaud's pentad. Charcot's triad is fever, right upper quadrant pain, and jaundice. This has a high specificity, around 85%, but the sensitivity is just 25%. Raynaud's pentad is Charcot's triad plus hypotension and altered mental status. This has an even worse sensitivity of less than 7%. Fever and abdominal pain are very common. Fever is present anywhere between 40 to 100% of patients, and abdominal pain, it's about 60 to 100% of patients. Jaundice is also present in about 60 to 70% of patients. Patients often have systemic symptoms like rigors and chills. They may present with complications from bacteremia, like septic shock, or a liver abscess. The key takeaway here is you can't rely on Charcot's triad or Raynaud's pentad. You need to think about cholangitis in patients with rigors, abdominal pain, jaundice, and those who are toxic in appearance. You also need to think about cholangitis in the older patient with sepsis without a source who's toxic or altered. Let's talk a little bit about the laboratory evaluation. LFTs are typically elevated, but the degree of elevation varies. Levels over 1,000 means the patient probably has a severe obstruction or is in septic shock. GGT and alkaline phosphatase are elevated in close to 90% of patients, and bilirubin may be over 4 milligrams per deciliter. I know we don't typically like to rely on the white blood cell count, but it's elevated in about 80% of patients with cholangitis. Patients also typically have an elevated neutrophil to lymphocyte ratio. It's usually over 5. One study found that a neutrophil to lymphocyte ratio over 5.3 predicts cholangitis with a 68% sensitivity and a 95% specificity. Of course, this needs to be taken into account with the clinical picture and your other laboratory evaluation. Like I mentioned a little bit before, blood cultures are positive in about 70% of patients. Your key takeaway here is you need to think about cholangitis with labs demonstrating biliary obstruction. Also think about it in patients with a high neutrophil lymphocyte ratio in the right clinical picture. For our imaging, we have several options like ultrasound, CT, and MRCP. Ultrasound is a great test to use at the bedside, but it can miss cases, especially if it's early in the disease. We're primarily looking for a dilated common bile duct. Greater than 7 millimeters is typically considered dilated. You do need to keep in mind that many patients with prior cholecystectomy can have dilation up to 10 millimeters. The unfortunate part about ultrasound is that sensitivity for finding a dilated common bile duct varies. It ranges between 38 and 91%. For common bile duct stones, ultrasound is about 25 to 60% sensitive. The nice thing about it is that you can use serial ultrasound exams at the bedside to look for disease progression. A single exam is just a snapshot in time. If your first ultrasound is negative at the bedside, then perform a repeat exam. CT with IV contrast is our next option. This can find dilated intrahepatic and common bile ducts and may also identify a nearby mass that causes external compression on the biliary structures. Multi-detector CT with IV contrast has a sensitivity between 85 and 97% and a specificity of 88 to 96% for identifying biliary duct dilation and strictures. It can also look for complications. There are some guidelines from 2013, the Tokyo guidelines, which actually recommend contrast-enhanced dynamic CT be used in the diagnosis of cholangitis, and they conclude that CT is the most effective imaging method. MRCP can be used if you have high diagnostic suspicion, but you have an inconclusive or a negative CT or ultrasound. The big takeaway here is you can't rely on one negative ultrasound to rule out cholangitis. Instead, think about performing serial exams. CT with IV contrast is also a great first-line test here. For diagnosis, the 2013 Tokyo guidelines have high sensitivity of around 92%. The specificity is about 78%. There are three diagnostic components for diagnosis. The first component is systemic inflammation, which might be fevers or rigors or evidence of an inflammatory response in your lab tests. The second is cholestasis. This could be jaundice or abnormal liver function tests. The third is imaging, which might be biliary dilation or evidence of an obstruction. We'll have a table in the show notes depicting these different criteria. If two of these criteria are present, you need to suspect the disease. If three are present, you have a confirmed diagnosis. The great thing about these criteria is they also break the disease down into grades based on the severity. Severe is grade 3. This is essentially cholangitis with end organ injury. Grade 2 means that the patient either has comorbidities, they have an elevated white blood cell count, or they have evidence of hyperbilirubinemia or hypoalbuminemia. Grade 1 is mild, which means the patient doesn't meet criteria for severe or moderate disease. Let's get to treatment. Your management focuses on broad-spectrum antibiotics, resuscitation with fluids and vasopressors if they're needed, symptomatic therapy like analgesics and antiemetics, and then finally consultation. Consult GI in all patients for decompression with ERCP. You should also think about discussing the case with surgery if the patient is toxic with end organ injury. Antibiotics need to cover enteric streptococci, coliforms, and anaerobes. There's no solid evidence for using antibiotics with high biliary penetration, but you still need to think about this. Some examples of antibiotics with good biliary penetration include piperacillin tazobactam, amoxicillin clavulanate, ciprofloxacin, ampicillin sulbactam, and cefepime. A good first-line agent would be piperacillin tazobactam, or you could use cefepime plus flagyl or meropenem. If the patient has a healthcare-associated infection, then you can add ampicillin or vancomycin. This is really the only time that a patient with cholangitis is going to need vancomycin. MRSA is a very rare cause of cholangitis. Back to that disease grading, this can help you with treatment decisions and timing of treatment. Grade 3 patients need near immediate or emergent decompression. Grade 2 means they still need emergent decompression. Grade 1 patients may only need medical management or a delayed surgical intervention to relieve that obstruction. About 80% of patients with mild or moderate cholangitis will improve with antibiotics and can undergo drainage in about 24 to 48 hours. However, if they don't respond in those first 24 hours to antibiotics, they need emergent decompression. If there's a delay in biliary decompression after a failure of medical therapy, mortality rates reach up to 80%. ERCP is a first-line modality for source control here. This has lower morbidity and mortality compared to open surgical biliary decompression. ERCP success rates are well over 90%. You do need to keep in mind that ERCP should not be delayed because the patient is toxic or too sick. This is actually an indication because you need source control. Toxic patients will probably need intubation before they go for ERCP. There are a couple other options like percutaneous drainage of the gallbladder or the biliary tree. This can be used when ERCP is unsuccessful or not feasible. Think about that patient with a Roux-en-Y in anastomosis or a Whipple resection or duodenal narrowing. Surgical drainage is the final option when other treatments have failed. All these patients will need admission to the hospital, and some will need the ICU. For us in the ED, the most important factor is first suspecting the disease. Don't rely on Charcot's triad or Raynaud's pentad. If you're concerned for cholangitis, perform an ultrasound at the bedside, and if your first look is negative, repeat it. CT with IV contrast has high sensitivity and specificity for the diagnosis. Finally, your management includes broad-spectrum antibiotics, resuscitation, symptomatic therapy, and consultation with your GI specialists and your surgeons. Thanks for joining us on the podcast. Stay safe and healthy, everyone.